Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She's Marjorie Egan. We are continuing our interviews with the gubernatorial candidates. Joining us in Studio 3, is State Treasurer Steve Grossman. Treasurer Grossman, it's good to see you.
Thank you, Jim. Marjorie,
thanks for having me back.
Thank
you very much for coming in. So Jim and I have carefully organized this interview. We're going to start with politics and get to policy. But before we get to either, I understand that you were spotted going door to door on the streets of Cambridge the other night by my colleague here, Mr. Browdy.
I'm driving down a street in darkness last night, a couple of nights ago in Inman Square. Snow is all over the place. It is freezing. And who do I see walking, appears to be going door to door in Cambridge, but a candidate for governor, and I look at him, and who is it but Steve Grossman? Is that what you were
well,
going door to door?
I was actually not going to door
to door. What were you doing?
There was a ward committee that was
having a little
meet and greet with candidates, and so I was told that there was great homemade cake and all kinds of good stuff. And you know me, sweets, no matter where the sweets are, I'm going to go chase them.
Ooh.
So I went in and had a good opportunity for good conversation. You know, the best kinds of conversations in a political campaign are not when you're giving a speech.
I agree with that.
It's when you're actually listening to other people and then responding. And it was a great conversation. We talked about climate change, jobs, the economy, housing, homelessness, affordability. It was a great conversation.
You know, I can't believe this.
You're
supposed reporter here. He's telling me that
Steve Grossman is going door to door.
He has no idea what he's talking about. Turns out you were going to a particular event.
I was close enough.
It's okay.
I looked like I was going door to door.
You know, speaking of ward committees.
Maybe go to Ryle's on the corner for a little music or something instead.
You know, speaking of going to a ward committee, the caucuses are now in full swing. And for the 400th time we've explained it, the caucuses are the places which elect delegates. Go to the convention in June, and everybody who wants to be on the September primary ballot's got to get 15% of the votes. Currently, the report suggests you're getting crushed in the polls, but you're winning the delegates.
Mm-hmm.
Is the spin that's happening on this delegates not your worst nightmare? Every candidate and every reporter and every columnist says Grossman is running away with this convention thing. If you don't run away with this convention thing, you're in deep whatever, aren't you?
Well, this is all about organizing. In my view, how do you win campaigns? You win campaigns by being organized. Ask Elizabeth Warren, bring her in here and say, Elizabeth, what's the most important thing that happened in your campaign? She would say the explosion of organizing and turnout in all the older industrial cities and the neighborhoods of Boston. She said people came out of the woodworks to vote and support because they believed that the ideas that we were talking about mattered in their lives.
So are those reports right? Are you winning significantly in this delegate count
issue? I think we're doing well in the caucuses and the organizing, and I think that's not surprising. Look, I've spent my life organizing. I mean, I've been an organizer. Look, when I was chairman of the Democratic National Committee back when Bill Clinton was president, I never gave up my seat on the Ward 7 Newton Democratic City Committee because you got to keep your ear to the ground. And when you put your ear to the ground, you hear a lot of things. You hear jobs, homelessness, housing, transportation. You hear deep, deep-seated concern about the direction in which we're going. And what are you, Governor, going to do about it? And so I think the organizing piece of this campaign is in full swing. We're doing well. I hope we continue to do well because I believe that the best organized candidate on the 9th of September in the Democratic primary will be the nominee the next morning. I really believe that.
We're talking with Treasurer Steve Grossman, who's running for governor on the Democratic side. For people who don't know, what actually does this mean, though? It means that you go to little gatherings of little political groups in little towns all across the state. I mean, do you go there for dinner? Do you go there for lunch? Do you go there for coffee? What do you do?
Well, they're all different. For example, I went last Sunday to Ward 9 in Worcester.
Yep.
And 90 people showed up to elect 10 delegates.
Wow.
And we brought people. Another candidate brought people. There was a lot of conversation. You shake a lot of hands. You meet a lot of people. You have a lot of interesting conversations. You learn and you listen. I've only learned when I listen, not when I'm talking. And at the end of the day, we won all the delegates at that ward because we organized it more effectively. And that group of 10 delegates who will come to the convention in Worcester are going to support me, and my hope is we'll do very well at the convention and go on with a lot of momentum to a primary that will be all about organizing. But it's also about the power of ideas to change people's lives.
Did you have food?
It was a little bit of food. It was mostly not about the food.
Okay. I just wondered if there were hors d'oeuvres or pastries.
Now, yesterday when I went to Taunton and went to a vocational technical school, the kids in the culinary arts program, they made me a homemade chocolate ice cream cake with Oreo cookie crust and chocolate ice cream in their new homemade ice cream maker. Now, that to me is a great day when I can have for breakfast at 9 o'clock in the morning homemade chocolate ice cream cake.
Okay. I want to talk about vocational schools and community colleges, which I know is part of your jobs agenda in a second. But one more political. I've known you for a very long time. When last week I read you, you may not like the word attack, criticizing Martha Coakley for what you say are flip-flops on things like three strikes and you're out, mandatory minimum sentences. That wasn't you to me. How comfortable are you? I mean this sincerely. How comfortable are you? You're usually good at promoting yourself and promoting the things you believe in. How comfortable are you criticizing another candidate with whom you serve, by the way? She's the attorney general. You're the treasurer. Are you okay doing that, or does it feel... It's sort of like an out-of-body experience.
No, listen,
no, I'm serious.
No, I know you're serious. And look, campaigns are about ideas and about our values. And we all evolve. We all change positions from time to time. I certainly have changed positions on issues over a period of time where I came to learn that the position that I had taken was not the right position and I should adopt a new one. But when I saw the Attorney General on issue after issue that has to do with criminal justice, three strikes, mandatory minimums, others as well, when I saw her continually changing her positions during the debates that we've had, and campaigns are about comparisons between candidates. I mean, after all, the voters are going to have to make a comparison and a judgment. So I simply pointed out that when the Attorney General makes so many changes in her position on so many issues that are fundamental to what she does as Attorney General, I begin to think that's probably a political decision on her part and not a matter of principle. And I think it's important to point that out to people.
Could the same thing be said about you, though, Steve Grossman, on this in-state tuition for the kids of illegal immigrants? You've been quoted regularly an interview you did with Dan Ray on WBZ, in which you appeared to suggest, this is a couple of years ago, that you would not support the use of state funds for that purpose, and now you do. Is that political, or is that an evolution, or what is that?
Let me clarify. Okay. In 2006, I was proud to stand next to former Representative Marie St. Fleur and support in-state tuitions for children of undocumented immigrants. That's a position I've held consistently since then. In 2010, when I was running against Karen Pulido, she attacked me repeatedly for this position. And I simply said, look, you're wrong, Karen. We're not using taxpayers' money for this. These several hundred kids, and it may be 700 or 800 or 900 at the most, are not using taxpayer money. They're actually paying tuition. It's actually bringing revenue into the state. So we're not using taxpayer money. I wouldn't use taxpayer money. They're paying their own way at a reduced rate of tuition, and they're adding value to the state. Why would we leave a single young person out or a single person behind when these young people, children of undocumented immigrants, can get a good education and contribute to the economy? So it was really an attempt to clarify her misconception that we were not using taxpayer money. You got a few hundred kids, and we got 300,000 kids in our public colleges, so we're not using a dime of taxpayers' money. It's actually producing revenue for the taxpayers and not taking a single seat away from any other kids. Marjorie.
You know, one more political thing before we get to a policy. We've moved a little bit away from the caucuses, but one of the big theories is that Steve Grossman's campaign is going to help Juliette Kayyem get to that 15% threshold she needs to get on the ballot, because then there'll be two women battling it out as opposed to just one woman, Martha Coakley. And, of course, Juliette Kayyem thinks that's ridiculous that we have gone beyond this two-woman thing. But other people would say, oh, a lot of women that vote are older women, and they may be torn between two women. So are you helping Juliette Kayyem?
No, we haven't even talked about that. We're competing for every delegate that we can get, and this is a competitive business politics. Juliette's doing the same. I think Juliette's doing fine. She's a distinguished candidate, done a lot of good things in her life, and makes a compelling case for herself. I've enjoyed getting to know her on the campaign trail. But this is really about our competing for every delegate, because every one of those delegates is a grassroots activist who can help us organize in her or his respective community to help us win a primary in November and go on to defeat Charlie Baker in November. That's what my goal is.
Let's discuss something, Steve Grossman, that's obviously big in the news today. The people in Revere, hopefully a lot of them, are voting in a referendum to determine whether or not they will compete with Everett for the Eastern Massachusetts casino. Here's another difference between you and the person who's leading in the polls on the Democratic side. Martha Coakley has said she's not sure how she'd vote on a ballot question should it make its way to the ballot, which would repeal the whole casino law, which would mean no casinos, no slots, parlors, etc. You've been pretty strongly, I think it's fair to say, in favor of the law. At the same time, you run the lottery, the most successful lottery in the country, a lottery on which more dollars is spent per capita by the people of Massachusetts than any state in America by far. Why are you not worried that if casinos open and are successful, meaning a lot of people gamble and lose a lot of money, that it's not going to cannibalize a huge source of revenue for cities and towns, namely the lottery that you run.
So as you just said, and I think it's important that people understand this, the lottery is the most successful lottery in the United States, and the profits from the lottery go back to cities and towns in the form of unrestricted local aid, firefighters, police officers, right. senior centers, all the things that make up quality of life. So naturally, we're dedicated to making sure we maximize profits at the lottery. The best analysis of what would happen to the lottery has been done by the Mass Taxpayers Foundation, by Mike Widmer. And he says, net of any losses the lottery might suffer, we will still bring an additional roughly $300 million into the state. That would fully fund, for example, universal pre-K education for every 3- and 4-year-old in Massachusetts, if we chose to use the money for that purpose. So I did favor expansion of casino gambling in Massachusetts because it will create 15,000 jobs and $300 million of revenue. That's at a moment, by the way. We're sitting here talking, and there are 250,000 people out of work. So if we can put 15,000 of those men and women to work and give them good jobs with benefits, health benefits, pension benefits, that's a good thing. So I would, if a ballot question gets on the ballot, and it's in the courts now, I would vote against repeal because it was passed by the legislature, signed by the governor. Any city and town that says, I don't want a casino, is not going to get a casino or a slot parlor. That's the way the law works. So I think the law is working pretty well. Revere may or may not decide. If they decide that they want a casino, then they'll compete with Everett, and the Gaming Commission will make that decision. So I think the law is working pretty well, and I'd just as soon like to see the law in place. The lottery will be fine. We will realize additional revenue, and we will invest that to improve the quality of life of most of our citizens.
You know, because I just, on a political level and a personal level, feel a little queasy about gambling in general and big casinos in Massachusetts. The idea of Charlie Baker always appealed to me. Let's have one casino and see how it works. We have the potential, of course, to have many casinos and at least how many slot parlors?
One slot parlor.
The law says you could have one slot parlor and up to three casinos.
Yeah,
not guaranteed, of course.
But it's a lot of casinos. I mean, what's wrong with Baker's idea?
Well, that may be as good an idea as any. The legislature and the governor came to an agreement, and it was signed by the governor. It's the law that we could have up to three. But the Gaming Commission could easily say, you know, it would oversaturate the market. So we are not going to vote for three casinos. We're only going to vote for two. There's also the possibility that one of the Indian tribes would be able to get their own opportunity for a casino, but that would require changes in Washington. So the law is fluid, depending upon what happens to the Indian tribes. But it is up to the Gaming Commission, and they are not required to vote for three. They're only required to vote for up to three, and that's their call, not mine.
You know, Steve Grossman, just one last thing on this gaming, as proponents call it, and gambling, as I guess critics call it. When Tom Birmingham was the chair of the Senate post-audit, whatever it's called, committee years ago, he did this comprehensive study on the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
And he not only demonstrated, I think for the first time I'd seen it, that it was, I think he was chair of the National Democratic Committee at this point, or something like that, that it was, again, we spend more dollars per capita than any place, but also there was sort of a Robin Hood in reverse, is that people in Chelsea and Holyoke and places like that spend much more per person than do people in Weston and Dover and that sort of thing. So you have people losing a ton of money on the lottery, and even though it does fund cities and towns, to make that extra $300 million on casinos, that means people have to lose hundreds of millions of dollars. Do you worry about the impact? Yes, it's creating jobs. Well, one can dispute how many, but it is clearly going to create some jobs. Do you worry about the impact on low and moderate income people? Because you spent a lot of your life working with low and moderate income people for decades.
I do worry about the impact and how it can harm people, particularly those who have a propensity to gambling addiction. And we do have gambling addiction. It's an illness, and it's something that we have to deal with. And we work with the compulsive gambling folks all the time to try to mitigate that.
Mm-hmm.
What I also have said is that I would not accept or support the expansion of online lottery gambling, which is something that the federal government allows, unless we deal with this issue of compulsive gambling. So we don't need to go further in that direction. But let's remember, a significant part of the revenue that we would bring back to Massachusetts, this $300 million we're talking about, is money that Massachusetts people are already spending at Foxwoods.
Right.
And at Mohegan Sun, and at Twin Rivers in Rhode Island, and at other places. So this is, to some extent, repatriating money that people already decide of their own free will to spend in casinos in different parts of New England. So let's bring the money back here. Let's invest it in things that matter in people's lives. Let's implement the law as the law was contemplated. And I think the lottery will be fine. And at the end of the day, $300 million of additional revenue, but more important, 15,000 jobs. I'd like to see a lot of people put to work, because a lot of people have looked in the mirror for three consecutive winters in this state and have not had a job. What does that do to people's lives? Their mortgage payments, their car payments, their groceries, their kids, their families, their self-esteem. Put some people to work. That, to me, is the most important issue in this campaign. Jobs and economic security. Look, I've spent my life running a business creating jobs. When I became treasurer, I took that record of success, and I've done exactly that, creating a small business banking partnership, and we poured money into banks that are loaning money to businesses owned by women, people of color, immigrants, veterans, to try to help the small business sector of the economy grow. I want to take that record of success to the governor's office and help create jobs and economic security. That's what I'm running on. That's why I would like to be governor of the state.
The governor of the state has taken some heat in recent days about, you know, the health connector has been struggling and people aren't able to get their insurance, and the licensing of these medical marijuana facilities has been full of confusion and misrepresentations. And, of course, the Department of Children and Families, a lot of reporting by my newspaper, the Boston Herald, about troubles there. So if you were the governor today, many legislators have called for the resignation of Olga Roche, who runs the Department of Children and Families. Do you think she needs to go?
On the DCF crisis, and
yes.
I would call it a crisis, here's my view. Governor has to establish fundamental principles that you're going to operate by. My principles are three. Safety of every child, accountability from top to bottom, from the commissioner to the social worker who was hired last week, and then reform. So there's an outside agency coming in here. They're analyzing this, and they're going to come with some recommendations that are going to be hopefully worked into the reform agenda. Last week, it was reported that Olga Roche had offered to resign. Had I been governor, I would have accepted her resignation. And then what I probably would have done, I probably would have picked up the phone and called former Chief Justice Margaret Marshall. And I would have said, Margie, I'd like you to come in here and work directly with me. I want you to oversee a reform agenda at DCF. You're a person who's of great wisdom and judgment. You are respected by every person in the state for the leadership role you played at the SJC when you were the Chief Justice. I would bring her in, have her work directly and report directly to me, oversee a reform agenda top to bottom, using the recommendations of the Welfare Child Welfare League that's doing this, so that we had a person of unquestioned judgment. Unfortunately, the people of Massachusetts have lost confidence in DCF. That's why it's a crisis.
Have you talked to her about this?
No, I haven't talked to her because I'm not the governor. It's not my – I would be overstepping the bounds. But you asked me what I would do as governor, and I think it's – running for governor is a lot about telling the people of Massachusetts, what kind of a governor would you be? How decisive would you be? How deeply engaged would you be in managing through a crisis and helping to solve problems? Marjorie, I've tried to be in the solutions business all my life. That's what I've done in business, in politics, in philanthropy, and now as state treasurer. That's why I'm running for governor, to be in the solutions business and to be strong and decisive and engaged every day in solving the problems that we face as a society, to make Massachusetts a better place for every one of our citizens.
You know, Steve Grossman, so you've picked one example of an area where there's been some controversy, to say at least, not to mention tragedy, obviously, at least in the case of Jeremiah Oliver, a little five-year-old boy from Fitchburg, where you would have made different decisions from the governor. Let's talk about the connector for a second. And while, as of a couple of weeks ago, the governor acknowledged there were as many as 50,000 applications that weren't in the system, apparently that number has dropped dramatically. Getting back to the likely Republican nominee, what Charlie Baker has said repeatedly, we wouldn't have any of these problems had the governor, meaning Deval Patrick, fought harder to get a waiver for Massachusetts. We had universal health care. It was running terribly well. The reason we're in this mess, and I'm paraphrasing what Charlie Baker's position is because we didn't fight like crazy with the Obama administration to say, we don't need to implement the Affordable Care Act. We need to stay with what we have. Is Charlie Baker right? Should we have gotten a waiver? Should we have just stayed with what was working rather than having the federal government's rules apply here?
Look, 2020 hindsight is great, and Charlie is operating. He's watching the game films on the
Well, he's been asking, in all fairness to Charlie Baker, he's been advocating for this waiver for a long time.
You see, I also have been strongly advocating for a waiver from the feds.
So you agree with him on that?
Different
issue.
Waiver, though.
Okay.
For me, the waiver was we had some very specific pilot programs that were going to reduce the cost of health insurance
for small businesses
by 10 to 15%.
Right. And those were denied by the press.
Those
he
were denied.
Them
I would
denied.
Have continued to fight for that. I will continue to fight for that because that's just common sense, Jim. I'm a small business owner all my life.
I know that.
I talk to small business owners, and they talk about the cost of health care as being one of the reasons why they're not hiring more people and why they're not confident about the future. Look, we've got a serious problem in the state in terms of the way we procure technology. I mean, it's not just the connector that isn't working. We had other problems in unemployment insurance, for example. We've had other issues. We spend hundreds of millions of dollars. We'll spend billions of dollars on technology over the next few years. We've got to get the procurement of technology right because technology drives our society. And if we're not doing a good job in terms of how we oversee the way we procure technology that can serve the people of the state, that's a serious problem. So having been in business all my life, that's a subject I'm comfortable with. I'm not the governor yet. I hope to be governor. When I am governor, I will tell you the procurement of technology and other goods and services is going to be a particularly important area of focus for me.
So how much of this do you – again, you said when the governor – by the way, the place where the governor said not to be self-serving, but I'll feel free to do so. Well, the place where the governor said he was offered a resignation was actually here last Friday. You would have accepted the resignation, obviously done that differently. You talk about the procurement of technology should have been done differently with the connector, unemployment insurance, the medical marijuana rollout, maybe 7 or 8 of the 20 that have gotten provisional approval – have either political connections that are raising some issues, misrepresentations by some of the alleged supporters who turn out not to be supporters, a whole variety of things. How much of all this do you lay at the feet of the current Democratic governor?
Look, we have some problems, and we've got to fix those problems, and I think it's the job of a governor to work with his team to fix them. He brought, I may be mispronouncing her name, Sarah Iselin in from Blue Cross to oversee the connector and to get that on track. And I think she's indicated some confidence that we're on a good pathway. I'd prefer to take a look at the governor's full 7.5 or almost 8 years. It'll be 8 years by the time he finishes and say, what did this governor do that put the people of Massachusetts in better shape when he leaves office than when he arrived? This is a governor who took this state and in 4 of the worst years in 75 oversaw a budget with optimism, was able to invest $1 billion in life sciences to create the best life sciences industry in the world, right here in Massachusetts, to be able to drive a process by which clean tech and green tech became an industry that now employs 80,000 people and over 5,000 companies. Our whole climate change approach and our reduction of greenhouse gas emissions under this governor has been exemplary. We're the best state in the country in terms of that issue. So I think this governor has done some extraordinary things that have put us on a pathway for growth and economic development for years to come. Are there problems? Absolutely. Do those problems need to be fixed? No doubt. Would I be a different governor with a different style? We all different. I'm a small business owner who was engaged every step of the way in my business in terms of fixing problems and solving the needs of customers. So we're different people. But let's not let the governor's 7-plus years of achievement go unnoticed because I watch them. And I've worked with him, by the way. Highest bond rating in the state's history. I worked directly with him and his team. I saw how he operated to put this state on a strong financial footing. And that is saving the state hundreds of millions of dollars, which we can reinvest in other things. So a lot of good things have happened on this governor's watch. He's a partner of mine. I respect what he does. But these problems need to be fixed, no doubt. And you're absolutely right.
Is Martha Coakley a partner of yours, and do you respect what she's done as Attorney General?
Yeah, I think Martha Coakley has been a fine Attorney General. I think she's accomplished some noteworthy things. I'm running against her because I think, frankly, that the leadership that I have demonstrated in my life, in business, in philanthropy, and as state treasurer, have qualified me to be the kind of governor that the people of the state hopefully will want. That's what elections are all about.
Two quick last things from me, Treasurer Steve Grossman. You have been a small businessman and a big businessman. You've done very well in your business all your life. What do you think about the minimum wage? Obama's wanting to raise the minimum wage across the country. Good for business or not?
I think it's good for business.
Okay. What about the jobs loss at the Congressional Budget Office?
I see that, but I also see 900,000 people getting out of poverty.
Okay.
And I think at the end of the day, minimum wage at this state, what the Senate president voted, the Senate's voted, it hasn't happened yet. I'm in favor of $11.
Okay.
And by the way, I would veto if a bill came to my desk and it increased the minimum wage to $11, but it also cut unemployment benefits for the workers in the state simultaneously. I would veto that bill. That's wrong. I'm proud of the unemployment benefits we have in the state.
That is the Charlie Baker position, I believe,
isn't
it?
No, it's a Speaker DeLeo position, is it not?
He wants
to reform the unemployment system.
Well, reform is okay, but don't cut unemployment benefits.
Okay.
We have 30 weeks of benefits. I'm proud of that. It may be the highest in the country, but it's the right thing to do. The feds cut the unemployment benefits for people, long-term benefits. We still have 30 weeks of here in Massachusetts. I'm proud of the fact that Massachusetts has 30 weeks of unemployment benefits.
And the last thing for me, John O'Brien is facing federal charges for allegations. He used to run the probation department, the allegations he was rigging hiring at the probation department. The Herald's reporting this morning that countless, quote-unquote, politicians have made immunity deals in this corruption case. And they've also reported like a who's who of every politician, Republican or Democrat in Massachusetts, that sponsored candidates for jobs at the probation department. Steve Grossman, have you sponsored people to probation department?
No, I have not.
You have not. Gee, you're one of the only ones that hasn't. Were you asked?
No.
You weren't asked. Okay.
I don't think I've ever met Mr. O'Brien.
Okay.
I wouldn't know him if I except for his picture in the Herald every day. I wouldn't probably know him if I bumped into him on the street.
So you don't need an immunity deal, obviously.
Look,
then.
The people of Mass. No, I don't hope
he
I don't need
for
an
other
immunity
reasons,
deal.
But not for that
okay.
reason.
But let me just a quick comment. I think when the people of Massachusetts see people getting positions of responsibility because of who they know, rather than did they deserve it or did they merit the job, it saps people's confidence in government. When we have so little trust in government and in the way government leaders on balance operate or handle themselves, that eats away at our ability to get things done. And one
of
the
things, Attorney General Martha Coakley should not have recommended people for those jobs.
I don't think anybody should have done it, frankly.
Okay.
That's just a blanket statement. I think it should have been done. And I think the way these letters and phone calls were made, and my next-door neighbor just graduated from college and she needs a job and can you help me, that kind of stuff, most citizens say, I can't do that. I'm not in that kind of a position. The favored few seem to get privilege and positions. That's wrong, and I think people don't like it, and that should end. We ended at Treasury when I became treasurer. We changed our policies entirely. It was the right thing to do, and as governor, I would maintain a position whereby we did it based on merit. Hire the best people. When I got sworn in on January 19th of 2011 as state treasurer, I said two things. First, I'm going to hire the best people for every job, because that's what I did in business and that's what everybody tries to do. Hire the best people for every job. And number two, I want hiring at Treasury to reflect the diversity of the society in which we live. And I'm proud that 35% of the people we've hired at Treasury and at the lottery in the last 3-plus years are people from diverse communities. That's what it means to reflect diversity and be inclusive. Leave no one out. Leave no one behind.
So
that's
I won't be calling Steve for a job anytime
soon. No, Jim. you in particular shouldn't call.
What's your website?
Marjorie can call anytime.
Thank you,
Treasury. Forget about it.
What's your website, Steve Grossman?
SteveGrossman.com, and I hope people will go on that online. Right. I hope people will call me and volunteer. We need all the volunteers we can get.
Good luck. Good to see you, Steve Grossman.
Thank you both.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks,
Treasurer
Marjorie.
Grossman. We have been talking, of course, with State Treasurer Steve Grossman about his run for governor. Up next, we get an overview of the Winter Olympics from sports reporter Shira Springer. She's fresh back from the palm tree-studded beaches of Sochi. The conversation next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.